Marina Vasey, you've been in Venice now for a few days.
Yes.
Could you say what your initial overview of this event is?
I think, oddly enough, they've got it more together than they usually do, and they have actually tried to clean up the gardens quite a bit, and everyone's put their best foot forward in terms of architecturally tightening up the quality of the pavilions. It's a very, very odd mix of things, but that's what the Biennale is always like, incredibly odd. The British Pavilion does look extraordinarily wonderful, and in fact Leon Kossoff and the British Pavilion have made it look positively radical to put paint on walls in frames, quite different from practically everything else, which is everything. But the point about the first week of the Biennale, and I think it's particularly interesting with the centenary, is everyone leaps onto the bandwagon and networks. So Princess Diana is here putting modern art on the pages of Hello, while Frank Gehry is here announcing the new Guggenheim in Bilbao, while every critic and curator is here, and although there isn't an Aperto, all the squalors are filled with young artists, and there's a hell of a lot of street theatre, which is really, in a way, it's all about sort of serendipity and that very first press week, which is the art world's biannual or now triennial get-together.
So are you particularly concerned that there isn't an Aperto? I mean, do you think that there's a gap here, something missing in the centre?
I am very sad about the Aperto, which I think was a terrific slip-up. It was because they were going to have the Architecture Biennale in the Corderay, and now they're going to have it on alternate years, the Architectural Biennale. It does mean that everyone is doing their own thing. It means it's more difficult for people to get around. The thing about the Aperto was it was one enormous gathering space of what is termed in an age which has abandoned the avant-garde to be the avant-garde. So that is an omission. But on the other hand, it's a rather reflective Biennale. It's more together in a kind of crisp, perhaps even commercial way than it's ever been. I think in one sense, the Americans have slightly miscalculated with Bill Viola, because you have to queue and because electricity always goes wrong. And I think with video and television installations, no one has conquered the intellectual or international problems of just how you plug into the power circuits.
But have you seen the Bill Viola, and what's your view of it?
I think it's rather moving, but I have a real, as a personal, totally subjective view, I have a problem with Bill Viola, because when you reduce the images down, the message they're giving is, in the midst of life we are in death, which is rather a message that a lot of us have heard in a lot of poetry, not to mention the Bible, and in his, it's rather crude, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, he uses ancient references in terms of philosophies and so on as source material,
yes.
And but can we finish by you talking a little bit more about the Leon Kossoff work in the British Pavilion? I mean, you really think it works there, and the light doesn't affect the images and the actual paintings adversely?
I think it does work very beautifully, partly because, or rather oddly, it's the walls have been painted a National Trust colour, which is a colour I've used domestically, and I call it calico, but evidently in the British Pavilion it's called string. And the reason I think it works is they're urbanistic and they're very classic studio paintings, in the sense of being the model, the portrait, as well as the Christchurch Spitalfields and the train pictures. They're very rooted in London and in a very particular experience, and I think they are very unusually heartfelt. And in a curious way, they seem to me to work very beautifully because they are extraordinarily authentic. I think no one really expects the art itself to be necessarily extraordinary, so that if you have a pavilion that works, you're just delighted. And I think the Leon Kossoff works. And I think the new ingredient in the last decade has certainly been the Palazzo Grassi, which means that there's always an attempt at, however messy and incoherent, at a serious and intellectual proposition. And nothing perhaps quite matches what happened in the 60s and the 70s with things like Ambiente and so on, because the art world is now much more diversified, much more international. There are many more museums, there are many more things going on all the time. And it's a nice little political dipstick in a funny kind of way. I mean, Korea has turned up. You can see how economics move. I mean, culture follows economics. And so the Korean Pavilion is a kind of little signal about Asia turning up, which I think is very interesting.
James Hall, here we are in the British Pavilion in the Leon Kossoff exhibition, but you've been here for a few days in Venice. Have you formed any particular overview of the event?
Yes, it's sort of wallowing in the past. Without the aperto, it rather loses its raison d'etre. And, there isn't really that much to see this year. And I think everyone I've spoken to has sort of been a bit nonplussed. We were all expecting lots of fringe events to spring up around the main ones, but that doesn't seem to have happened, apart from the British Council's exhibition of young British artists.
What do you think of that?
There's some interesting work in the show, but the catalogue is incredibly jingoistic and doesn't really seem to relate to much to my experience of the work. In the back of the catalogue, they've got this long list of sort of alternative exhibitions in London since about 1988, alongside world events. So you get, an exhibition in Transmission Gallery alongside, I don't know, the bombing of Sarajevo. And I think it's a bit unfair on some artists who are just perhaps, their first public showing being sort of turned into kind of world historical figures already.
Were there any particular works in that exhibition interested you, or is that too difficult?
Well, I can describe them to you, whether I can remember the names of the artists. That was quite nice. One guy whose name escapes me had put some these what looked like tears coming from the roof. They were made out of some sort of resin, and a couple of, Gary Hume painting that I liked, though they didn't look terribly good in a Venetian church particularly. And what else was there? Oh, and there was a quite a oh yeah and there were the Chapman brothers with their got one of their Goya based mannequins that was quite striking.
Coming back here then to the Giardini, before we talk about the Leon Kossoff exhibition, what other national pavilions and displays will you go away thinking about?
I haven't yet been able to get into the Bill Viola because the queues are so long, but Bill Viola's a pretty dull artist anyway, so I shouldn't think I'd have been very impressed by that. But the Dutch pavilion was the only one for me that's actually there were three artists in it, and it actually seemed to work as a whole. There was Marlene Dumas, the painter, who did sort of lurid images of women, and then there was a video artist whose name I can't remember, who had juxtaposed videos of a woman doing handstands against the wall and a tumbler jumping and rotating in the air, and a man having a shower. And then there was a sculptor who did sort of blobby-like forms mixed in with sofas and things like that. Don't ask me what any of it means, but I'll work that out once I'm back home and the deadline's looming.
For The Guardian.
Yes.
Well, finally, as I was saying earlier, here we are in the British Pavilion with the Leon Kossoff paintings. How do you think this show works?
Well, it doesn't really. I mean, they should have had a retrospective. No one outside Britain really knows his work, and the recent works aren't his best. I mean, there are a couple of others in the show, main show in Palazzo Grassi, and they're from the 60s, and they are better works. I still don't think he's a terribly good painter. Everyone talks about his marvellous handling of paint, but for me, all the action just seems to take place on the surface with all these sort of dribbles and squitty bits, and then when you kind of penetrate through it, it's just all dead, inert. I mean, it's clearer if you look at some of his pictures of portraits of people. I mean, that's slightly more exciting work, but it all just seems a bit kind of flat and sort of dead.
The colour surprises me to some extent. It seems in this light quite saturated. I was wondering what they would look like in very unique Venetian light, which is quite all-pervasive, isn't it? It's penetrating.
Yes, I suppose they does tend to make them a little sort of more washed out than they might do in the overcast skies of London. But I think Kossoff sort of strangely fits in with the mood of this Biennale, because you got sort of viola and then the show at Palazzo Grassi is all of 20th century figurative art and a lot of School of London stuff, and then you've got César with his crushed and rusting cars. I mean, it seems to me like, you know, it's sort of the ethos is of the, it's definitely the sort of Prozac age. Everyone's very depressed, all these artists, you imagine. There's not a lot of jokes around. It's sort of rather, in that sense, I suppose the young British artist comes as a bit of a relief, that they're sort of a bit more, you know, people like, you get the sense that they've got a sense of humour. Whereas, you know, you wouldn't want to go and have a drink with Leon Kossoff, would you?
Now sounds from a work by Marieke van Warmerdam in a Dutch pavilion comprising large-scale video projection.
What's your overall impression?
Well, it seems to be even more scattered than it was last year, and I've tried to concentrate on the shows outside the garden. It's a question of finding things, and there's some very good things if you find them.
And what are they?
Well, I particularly enjoyed the Anne Hamilton that's in a very small courtyard, small video piece.
And anything else?
Well, I've also enjoyed the... I mean, coming back to the gardens, I've also enjoyed the Holland Pavilion. Although it was slightly difficult because of a problem with light, the work by Marieke van Warmerdam, of kind of repetitive physical actions. I thought that was an interesting. And I'm standing in the queue for the Bill Viola, for which I have high hopes.
What about the British?
Yeah, the British show, general release. I enjoyed the work. I thought the space they were working with was not... somehow the work was fitted into it, and I thought that was disappointing because the space was actually quite magnificent, and perhaps to do a group show in a space like that is a little too ambitious. I thought Adam Trotsko's work as a site-specific piece somehow picked up on Venice in the way that other site-specific pieces that I've seen haven't for me.
Well, I thought, yes, about the general release show, I thought Sargassum, which is by Matthew D.L. Louise Scullin, is really a kind of winning piece with a fantastic sort of floating hypnotic light coming up above from lots of very small lights with those strange sort of, what are they called? What would you call them? So the discs you have in fake coal fires, kind of throwing up this sort of shimmering pattern. And I thought that with Douglas Gordon's Hysteria piece, where you see what appears to be two doctors sort of first of all negotiating and then struggling with this woman who kind of goes completely, well, hysterical, but it's also very funny and very sort of shocking at exactly the same moment. So these two large installations upstairs I think are very impressive. Downstairs, first time round, I missed a couple of the works. Elizabeth Wright's 60% of the phone directories, these sort of miniature phone directories, are completely extraordinary once you realise that's what they are, and rather fascinating. And I was very impressed. I think if I wanted to talk to one of the artists there who I hadn't met, it would be Jackie Irvin. I think her film, which is a combination of a sort of French-sounding voice, some kind of old music, I don't know whether it's Prokofiev, and a Super 8 film of a chandelier sort of going around, sort of following around the chandelier, very glittering. It's extremely beautiful and very sort of moving. And with the Adam Chodsko, somehow I mean, there's enough works in the show that are sort of about Venice, they're kind of about being here, to make it, I think, a really significant show in the overall Biennale. I think it's a success.
And here in the Giardini, is there anything?
Here in the Giardini, well, I'm rather keen on the kind of chaotic, crazy labyrinth of the Italian Pavilion. I mean, having been before, I know that when you think you've seen it all, you definitely haven't, and you have to kind of push through another curtain. And if you keep on going, you'll find there's a whole historical section of photographs. The best of all, and I can't unfortunately remember his name, is this, this Chinese painter who's done a painting of young pioneers' faces, which you might think was like... not Kabakov, the other Russian, would be like this idea of Russian artists, you know, working with the symbols of communism. So Chinese painters are doing the same thing, but somehow has a more moving quality about it. It's very perfectly painted. The faces are slightly elongated in some way, and there's a kind of delicacy about the actual kind of uniforms and clothes they're wearing. I think it's very impressive.
And what about the British Pavilion?
Well, I think there's an extraordinary sort of dusty light in the pavilion, and the pinks really pick up. There's a kind of... It makes you look at Kossoff in a different way. It's as though you're looking at it through this kind of haze in some sense. And then, of course, you look at the actual titles, and these fantastically banal Kilburn Underground Station, which slightly brings you back down to earth from the sun of Venice. I think it's good. And after the sort of... In a way, it's very well selected, because the kind of chaos and the kind of triviality of so much in the Biennale, here are these really solid, serious-looking paintings. And I noticed that the actual drip of the paint is very delicate and almost sort of like a certain period in Jackson Pollock, which I never really picked up on before, as though it's kind of cake icing. It's kind of gauzed. It's sort of run across, as though it's sort of dripped from above. And I was quite impressed. I'm sort of a slow convert to Kossoff.
Andrew Brighton, perhaps you might say what you think about the Biennale.
I think what I have to say about the Biennale is, on the whole, pretty obvious. By the absence of the Aporto, you have removed a lot of young artists, a lot of young dealers, a lot of young critics who would otherwise be here. So in a sense, it's become a rather middle-aged occasion. And this is an impoverishment of the Biennale, certainly as I have in the past experienced it. And this is, I think... a grave mistake. It misunderstands one of the fundamental functions of the Biennale, which is as a gathering of new talents, new proposals, new arguments, which may come and go. They may not be justified, they may simply disappear, but the point is that it attempts to suggest and put forward new artists as being serious and worth attending to. And even though that may be inaccurate or simply be dismissible by the Puritans in some way or other as just mere fashion, it is more important that this happens than simply we get it right all the time. This, in a sense, this Biennale is an attempt to get it right all the time. And that premise for the Biennale is wrong. It has to risk, and this Biennale hasn't risked.
But does it have any agendas by implication? Because 2 years ago... the agenda seemed to be the idea of dissolving the National Pavilion and changing that by inviting artists who might be associated with the country but not necessarily of that nationality. But has anything replaced it this year, or has that been built on, do you think?
Well, it's strange that sort of the idea of alienation and the other concept that's been boasting to be in ordering this event has not actually produced anything very radical. I think on the whole, the national pavilions have been disappointing. People have lapsed into reproducing national stereotypes. Those artists, say, for example, in the British Pavilion, they simply misunderstood how to get over the problem of addressing the Biennale art situation with the artists they have. They have, I think, failed to serve the artists well, because there are very special conditions about an artist who makes art in the northern light and is suddenly put into the southern light, and what that does to the pictures they simply have failed to take on board. On the other hand, there's the Jean Clair exhibition that sort of spreads it round through the Italian Pavilion and then other venues, and in a sense it's a fascinating combination of work. In a sense, it looks at certain work which has been on the margins and attended to, and that I welcome. But the trouble is that, in a sense, the level of attention to these artists is very slight. To give a specific example, there's an artist called Alexander Denika, who was an artist trained in the late 20s in Russia, and who made some remarkable paintings. Now, in a sense, there are two works by Danica in John Clare's exhibition, and I welcome that. But on the other hand, in order to take on Danica, you need to see an awful lot of other works, and in a sense, it becomes rather like looking, the major exhibition looks rather like looking through a Life magazine. It has a sort of photographic image, sort of engrossment that it calls upon the speaker to have. But it sort of cancels. It's so much about images that actually ultimately perhaps it comes rather kitsch. It actually kitschifies a lot of the images it presents, and so that this drama of images kind of sucks out of the work their difficulty, their actual formal qualities, and I think quite a lot of it is. So I'm actually rather troubled by Jean Clair's presentation, even though I welcome its promiscuity of choices from the last 100 years, which in some ways is quite liberating. So I think it's a very ambivalent show.
When you were talking about Northern Light and Southern Light, presumably you were talking about the Kossoff yes. installation at the British Pavilion. So you didn't think it worked in relation to the light?
I don't think so. I think the curators served him ill. I think there's a real problem about putting an artist of Kossoff's character, which is in a sense asking you to look very hard for very long at a sort of highly worked image in the context of an international Biennale. And that's a problem because people kind of have an awful lot to see, and so that people don't. It's difficult to break the sort of pace of attention that these sort of events seem to ask for. Now, I think trying to do that, to try and change that pace of attention, is quite valuable. But in order to do that, you've got to get the curatorship dead right. And I mean, very specifically, the height of the work, the colour of the wall, the amount of light that's coming through the ceiling, and all these things, it seems to me, at the British Pavilion, they have not got right. They have not served Kossoff well in terms of the way that they presented him.
Right, talking with Adrian Searle. Adrian, apart from this show, which you haven't seen yet because you just turned out, what have you thought?
I thought it's been a little bit disappointing with the work that hasn't been in the main pavilions. I mean, the stuff on the periphery hasn't been quite as exciting as I'd have hoped it would have been. And as for the zoo in the Giardini, well, it's kind of business as usual, really. I liked very much the Dutch pavilion with Marta Roosens and Marlene Dumas. Although one English critic, Bill Fever, told me that he thought Marlene Dumas couldn't draw. I was looking for him to push him in a canal ever since. But Russian pavilion I thought was pretty good, although really it was all said by Ilya Kabakov last time, everything that needed to be said about the collapse of the Russian Empire. Japan was too much techno. Bill Viola, I think, was great. I mean, really terrific, especially the piece, The Waiting. The piece I really liked was called The Greeting.
The Greeting, the last piece.
The last piece, which I thought was really... It was almost a Jeff Wall that moved. And I think it owed a lot to Jeff Wall in many ways, but I liked it very much. I thought that was terrific. And as for us Brits, well, the Brit Pack, I think, was a pretty good show, with exceptions. But that seemed to have a kind of buzz that a lot of the other peripheral works and younger artists showing outside of the main pavilions didn't have. It was kind of witty, light. Interestingly, Douglas Gordon's kind of references to hysteria in his work kind of chimed in very nicely with the Jean Clair show with the Louise Bourgeois piece. There seems to be a lot of hysteria around this year, or maybe it's just the heat, I don't know. What else? As for the main British pavilion, well, that's what you expect, really. I quite like trains, but not that much. It's a bit of a train spot. It was lumpier than Auerbach, so I mean, maybe that's what it had going for it. As for the rest of the pavilions, a bit nonplussed. Bill Henson, no thank you. Canada, very environmental and makes us feel guilty about our colonial past. There were some nice seals in the Scandinavian pavilion, some beautiful photographs of seals. I thought they were pretty terrific. But on the whole, I thought it was a rather lackluster event and really lacking the kind of spark you'd want and expect. And I must say that to choose someone like Leon Kossoff seemed to me to be bad timing, really. I think what people are interested in mostly abroad is looking at people like Rachel White-Reed or Damien or some of the other younger British artists. I mean, Leon Kossoff is an estimable painter. And when you see his work next to Eugène Leroy in the Piazza Grassi, then you think, well, they're in a kind of line, and it is a European tradition, this kind of hard-won image. And yet somehow it feels like no one's very interested in things that are hard-won at the moment. They want the quick and the zappy. Maybe this was a chance to slow everything down and to put profundity back into art again, but I think there's plenty of it there in people like Viola, in even Cécile Floyer's hands twiddling its thumbs. I thought there was a kind of pathos in that was pretty good, and I think we missed out yet again. That's what I think.
Do you think that really the lack of an aperto is a major problem, that there's that kind of disparate smattering of little young artist shows all around the place that don't really add up to enough of a solid thing for people?
Absolutely. I really think that the little shows around the place aren't solid enough, and they're hard to find, and whenever you go looking for one you fall over another of Marc de Souvre's dreadful sculptures, which puts you off. You can't find any of the young art, but you can find him wherever you go, which is deeply boring. I've just been on a sculpture trail in the gardens of Venice, and I've only been to three so far, out on the Giudecca. But that struck me as a very good idea. It gets people out and about, it gets them off the main drag and into bits of Venice that they wouldn't otherwise see. And although the art itself wasn't that brilliant, that's a nice thing to do. And I wish it really does need a bit of coordination, the young art, because you can spend a lot of your day looking and not finding things, or going to the wrong place, or... And if there was more of a centre for it, and that there was at least some kind of coordination, you don't actually need to have a proper aperto, because I think the last one was a bit like the motor show at Earl's Court. You know, you've got three of these, two of those, one or the other. And it is nice to see things in unusual circumstances and with a bit of space around them. But you need some way of coordinating it and providing a way for people to find it without having to hang outside a bar at 4 a.m. to get the whisper on who's hot in some deserted courtyard, you know, miles away.
Could I just ask what you thought of the Swiss pavilion, which you didn't mention?
Fishley Weiss. Well, apparently there are 80 hours of Swiss people doing Swiss things, and I kind of surfed the channels for about 35 minutes. And watched men doing things in the snow with twigs, and other people digging a tunnel under a mountain, I presume, and someone falling into fondue, or whatever it is that Swiss people do. They very much underplayed it, and whatever Fishley Weiss do, I think, will always seem a pale shadow to The Way Things Go, or whatever that early film was called, which, to me, was their best piece ever. There's a Christian Markley show somewhere, but I don't know where.
At the Church of San Stai. It's down on the other side of the Rialto.
So I haven't seen that. But I found Fishley Weiss entertaining, but in a Swiss sort of way. I ate my Toblerone and came away again, really. As for the Italian pavilion's big disaster, I think. Don't really need to see Andy Goldsworthy ever, let alone there. And there's some horrible artworks in that pavilion, really... grim bits of painting. There's a lot of grim painting all over the place. With the Jean Clare show, I think the Hockneys are irrelevant. The whole of the second section in the Musée Corrère, I think, shouldn't have happened and seemed arbitrary. And everyone's been talking about the body and the other in art for years, and it's sort of had its day, really. I mean, give us another other, and... the body's a bit of a cliche now. But the first half I liked very much. I mean, I think it got worse as you went through it, but the first half, dealing with the earlier part of the century, was very good indeed. It was a peculiar slanted anthology, and I quite enjoy those because you always end up seeing things that you could go a long way to find and never see in other places. You know, Jean Fautrier, I haven't seen enough of for many years, and the juxtapositions of someone like Louise Bourgeois with sort of hysterical work from earlier in the century, some of the kind of, if you like, outsider art, I think was an interesting place to begin. And all, there's been a lot of talk about that show having somehow colluding with the things which are in it, to do with National Socialism, to do with the Mussolini epoch, to do with anti-Semitism. I think if you're going to deal with the 20th century, then you have to bring those kinds of issues into play. And they were brought into play, and I didn't find it quite as offensive as many other people did. The juxtaposition of Zoran Music, the Israeli artist who I think was himself in Auschwitz, opposite a painting of a German family from the late 30s sitting in a German landscape wondering about what's happened to their Heimlich, I thought was a very interesting and apt juxtaposition, miles better than this weak-kneed show that was on called After Auschwitz in London recently. And I think showing the two kinds of art opposite one another makes the point much more tellingly about the dangers of totalitarianism, the rise of nationalism in Europe. You know, we're not that far from the old Yugoslavia, and even going with something like the Croatian Pavilion in St. Mark's Square, it's like it hasn't happened. It's like no one wants to talk about it. It's all very well to worry ourselves about the Third World, about some of the issues that were in that strange little show that was sponsored by Japan, where there's some Aborigine artists and the man who wants to swap your blood or your sperm, which was all a bit PC, really. But no one's really talking about the war just going on down the road, you know. Closer than Rome, I think.
Great, thanks.
Now our flute player takes part in a tree planting ceremony in the Biennale Gardens, and then the sounds of two large acoustic metal structures by Takis outside the Greek Pavilion.
There's this table here which is just full of very small images, yeah, with a set of instructions on the back. Could you tell me what it's all about?
Okay. Well, the exhibition itself firstly includes a work of over 1,000 artists, and each artist has made 100 image cards, which again is just a pictorial piece, and it can be text or anything they desire. But what's important is it doesn't have any signature on that card. And they've made another 100 corresponding signature cards which match that card, either in a retinal way or just conceptually or just purely as a way of indicating authorship. And why that's important is what happens is that these first half, the actual image card, are free of charge. So the spectator basically can take a work from the table or a few works, but they're not sure who's made the piece. And that's critical because what that does is challenges this notion of authorship. That if you don't know who's made the work, how do you value that particular object? Is it because you just like it, or is it because you think it might be valuable? And what is quite curious about the whole event is that people don't realize, but the actual concept is one where it's challenging the relationship between the institution, the spectator, and the artist. And how it does that is obviously it empowers the spectator to the degree where they become not only the curator and the collector, but they also have to sort of, in a way, question their prejudices. So when they get this work on this table, as I said before, there are a few cards that are done by internationally famous artists that are worth a few hundred pounds, but you get people sort of just throwing them down, primarily because they're for free, but secondly, because the format is one where it's an anti-monumental format. For us, what's fundamentally interesting is that when people come to the desk, the dialogue that ensues is one where ourselves as organisers can actually engage with a spectator and describe these issues to them so that you're making a public, in this case obviously it's a very specialist public compared to other venues we've done this project previously like the Edinburgh Festival, but you can engage them on a level where normally they don't consider these things, they don't consider the relationship between themselves and the institution and the artist you know, as a sort of producer.
They can find out who it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But they have to sort of go back to the main post office and actually say, I would like to buy the signature card for that piece. And what's quite curious is that the dispensers themselves are placed in various venues. So, for example, there's in the Carrera Museum, the Museum of Modern Art, some libraries, etc. But also in places like the casino, bank, post office. And the sort of, in a way, the sort of authority of those institutions act very differently on the way people consume the work. So when you get the same piece of work being dispensed from, let's say, Burger King compared to the Museum of Modern Art, its value almost decreases like 100% because people think, oh, obviously this can't be art, it can't be good art, especially if Burger King, you know, owns it or is dispensing it free of charge. But also the fact that it's free really makes people very, very suspicious that it can have any value anyway. And again, for the artists, I mean, what they have to do is obviously question who they're making work for and also where the value actually sort of lies. Is it constructed by, firstly, their reputation or by the content of the work? Because obviously when people look at that work, they don't know who's made it, they don't know where they've come from. So the only way they can look at it and judge it is because they like it or they appreciate what it's trying to communicate. So what you find is that there's a priority for content over form. The artists, they pay £10 to take part, and the project is unfunded in terms of there's no financial, there's only in kind. So they actually support the whole project, but also they're donating all their work. And what happens is the money from the signature card goes to the Children of Sarajevo Fund. And the reason being is questioning, firstly, what art serves, what purpose in society, beyond reflecting certain kind of cultural, political or social issues, what purpose beyond that, and whose interest does it serve as well. But also, Sarajevo is a twin city of Venice, and again, in Europe, you know, people are sort of amazingly apolitical about the fact that Sarajevo and Venice are twin cities, but also they shared a very similar kind of heritage and culture, and one now is obviously destroyed and one is intact, and why, you know, one would be allowed to, you know, get into such a state and the other would never be allowed to get into such a state.